Hi, this is Paula Morrell, and welcome to the Tales from the South podcast.
And he says the Bible tells him who he can and cannot hate. Then he promises redemption with the passing of the plate. Well, as Simon Peter met this man, you know he'd still be at his net. Log, but I'm still on the back row, cause I ain't that angry yet.
How's everybody doing tonight? So how about tonight's music by Mark Curry? Y'all like Mark? Little Rock's Mark Curry is a singer-songwriter whose roots run through Fort Worth, Texas, and the deep pine forest of southeast Arkansas. More can be heard and found at markcurry.com. All right, well, welcome to Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, and to another edition of Tales from the South, where Southerners bring their own true stories to life. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, both right here in North Little Rock, Arkansas. Tonight's show is in conjunction with the third annual Arkansas Cornbread Festival, taking place in downtown Little Rock on Saturday, November 2nd, 2013. And I'm your host, Paula Martin Morrell. On my right here, strumming his 1931 National Resonator, is blues guitarist Mark Simpson. A native of Arkansas, Mark was the longtime sideman for legendary bluesman John So Blue Weston and was a house guitarist at Junior Kimbrough's Juke Joint in Tullahoma, Mississippi. Mark wrote our theme music and plays for us live each week. And how about our set back here? Y'all like our set? Each show we feature an artist, so tonight's featured artist is Little Rock painter Christy Young, and our featured piece is this piece right over here, which is entitled Acoustic Color and is for sale. Our listeners can find out more about this piece and Christy at our website, talesfromthesouth.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern-style storytelling? Tonight, our stories all have cornbread in them, either as a side dish or the main entree. All stories are true and told by the Southerners who live them. Later tonight, Ansha Briggs stumbles upon cornbread unsuspectingly and will end the night with Heidi Watkins Damron as her confidence in making cornbread quickly slips away. But let's start the night with Joanna Seibert as she remembers her grandparents in Food at My Grandparents' Table.
The dreaded call comes late at night. Your grandfather is in a coma. We think he had a stroke. In the morning, I board the first plane back to my hometown in Tidewater, Virginia, to visit him. Thoughts flood my mind on the long plane ride. My grandfather was the most significant person in my growing up years. I spent every Sunday afternoon and evening with him and my grandmother. We ate the same Sunday dinner. Cornbread, fried chicken, green beans, potato salad, their cook Mabel's homemade pound cake. After dinner, I would sit on his knee as he read me the funny papers. We all then took a short nap. I can still see him and my grandmother lying together on the small couch in their dining room den. Then we would go to the country, to his farm, walking the length of his property by the Mattapony and York Rivers, as he told me stories about his growing up days. Sometimes we would visit his nearby relatives in the cemetery where my grandmother's parents are buried. Then we would walk to his townhouse for Sunday night church. Seven Up floats, the Ed Sullivan show. I would spend the night in their big guest room bed and then walk to school the next day. My grandfather is a symbol of unconditional love, always there for me, supporting and loving me in good times and bad. I did not spend much time with him after I left my hometown and went away to college and medical school. He, however, never forgot me and sent me letters every week on his 30-year-old typewriter with intermittent keys that barely print. Every other sentence ended with, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Each letter was filled with stories of his experiences away from home in World War I and words of love and encouragement. Always enclosed was a dollar bill. When he suffered this stroke 20 years later, I am devastated. I cannot bear to lose the love which I knew he showed to me, no matter what I had done. I walked into my grandfather's hospital room for the first time. There is an immediate look of astonishment on his face. I believe he knows me, even though he never again shows any sign of recognition. As I sit by his bed and listen to his labored breathing, I feel helpless. What can I do? All my years of medical practice do not give me answers. I remember his faith tradition and honor it by reading the Psalms aloud, beginning with Psalm 1. On his law they meditate day and night. They are like trees planted by streams of water, which yield their fruit in its season, and their leaves do not wither. I'm embarrassed when personnel come into the room, but an inner voice says, "This is what my grandfather wants to hear." I am calmed. This is what I would want at my deathbed, to hear the Psalms read by someone who loves me. My grandfather's illness and death become a major turning point in my life. This is the beginning of my journey in earnest, seeking to find a connection with a power greater than myself. I desperately want to believe that somehow I will stay connected to my grandfather, and my tradition tells me this might be possible through a belief in God. I cannot bear the thought of never again knowing the love I received from my grandfather. I want to turn and return to my tradition and begin a new spiritual journey. My grandfather's unconditional love leads me back to the unconditional love of God. I learned from my grandfather about trees planted together by streams of water, hoping to bear fruit in their season, where leaves do not wither. And it all started with cornbread every Sunday dinner. Taste and see that God is good.
Joanna Seibert is a deacon at St. Luke's Episcopal Church in North Little Rock and a pediatric radiologist at Arkansas Children's Hospital. This story is from a book written with her daughter called Taste and See How Good God Is, about finding God, especially when food is present. Next, Ansha Briggs is asked to cook a Southern dinner, and it gets, well, interesting in The Accidental Cornbread.
As a Swede visiting Arkansas in the summer of 1968, I had so much to learn. One Saturday morning, my friend and I drove to Dumas to visit a catfish farmer. Little did I know that I would actually be fishing and should, of course, have dressed more appropriately for the occasion, as summer dress and sandals did not cut it. I knew this was not going to be my day, as I was sinking into a muddy mess stepping out of the car. But the farmer's wife took pity on me and lent me a pair of boots and something I needed even more, mosquito repellent. Here came fresh new blood, my arms and legs totally exposed. What a feast! Again, the farmer's wife realized mosquito repellent was not enough and lent me a plastic raincoat. I was not sure what was worse, the bites or sweating like a pig underneath the raincoat, which soon was just plastered to my body. Properly attired, I was giving a fishing pole, and within a few seconds, to my delight, I had caught a huge catfish. My first catch was big, so big it nearly pulled me into the pond. Was I thankful for those boots and the raincoat when the fish started splashing and wriggling, just soaking me? I called out for help. Help arrived. Together we landed the fish, and as I was going to throw it back, he said, "No, this is for you to take home." I looked at this ugly, big fish. He obviously could read my thoughts because he said, "Would you like for me to prepare the fish for you?" I really did not know what all that entailed, but hoped it included cooking. "Oh, yes, please." Thinking the less I have to touch, the better I would feel. It was finally time to drive home. My friend had spent most of his time inside, talking catfish, gathering material for an article, and barely glanced at the ice chest the farmer gave us. The next day, my friend informed me he had invited a couple to dinner that evening since we had these fish we needed to eat. I opened the ice chest, and there were 3 big catfish. They were not cooked, but I could see that they had been cleaned. That is, the skin torn off and all the innards had been taken out, but the tail, head, and long whiskers were still there. So I thought, no way. I'll go to the store and buy something I know how to prepare. When I heard him say as he left to play golf, "They are really looking forward to pond-raised catfish and hush puppies." Did I hear correctly? Did he say hush puppies? Is that not a shoe? I must have heard the wrong thing. I looked around for a cookbook, tried to contact his family, but no one was home. Oh, surely I must have heard the wrong thing. A few more phone calls, but being a Sunday, people were either at church or away, and I really did not know that many people I could call. So walked a 15-minute walk to the grocery store. When I asked what a hush puppy was and how to prepare it, the store clerk looked at me with eyes full of compassion and showed me the shelf with cornmeal. He said, "There is a recipe on most of these cornmeal bags. Just look for the easiest one, and since you've never tried making one before." They all read basically the same to me, so picked up 2 different bags. Since there was no fish counter, I asked at the meat counter, "How do I prepare catfish? If I was going to have to serve this fish, my plan was to cut big pieces and boil them in water and make some sort of soup with vegetables, like a bouillabaisse." But the person I asked, who seemed to know everything about catfish, said, "You fry them in oil and then in cornmeal." He never said with or without the head. Loaded with oil, cornmeal, eggs and buttermilk, onion and all sorts of items, the walk home took twice as long. This time, no one stopped me to ask if they could drive me home. Strange, because when I borrowed a bike to ride to the grocery store, cars stopped to offer me a ride. Of course, I declined. I thought I was so crazy. I know the bike would have easily fit in the car trunk, but that's not the point. Where is the offer for a ride now when I really need one, I thought. Got home, set the table, hoping my golfer would show up before I tackled all the cooking. Finding the right pots and pans was not easy. This was a bachelor's kitchen. Found a big pot outside that mostly seemed to be collecting rainwater. I could fill it with oil, had bought a large bottle, so I could first fry the fish and then the hush puppies. Heads or no heads? That was the next question. I had been served fish in other foreign countries with heads on, so I thought that is probably why the farmer left it on. So in went the whole fish. In the meantime, I tried to figure out how to make these hush puppies. Since I had never seen one, and there was no picture on the cornmeal package, and no cookbook handy, I could not really tell how big or small they were supposed to be, nor the consistency. Well, there's plenty to drink, and the table is set. Should I still be in here when the guests arrive? By now, with all this oil frying, the kitchen was getting hotter and hotter. And I realized I was just soaked. Quickly changed into my 2-piece bathing suit. The one the one that had gotten me evicted from the swimming pool at the country club a week earlier. This two-piece was approved even by my very conservative mother, but not by Mr. Courtney, who had his own moral standards. A sliver of skin showing off the midriff could cause all kinds of problems, I guess. About 30 minutes before the guests were supposed to arrive, I hear my friend. After a shower, he peeks into the kitchen and asks, "Why are you in your swimsuit? And looking at the food, what is this?" Looking at the breaded fish and the floating kernels of cornmeal. I had finally found a frying pan and covered the entire fish, including the head and the tail, in cornmeal. And it was now slowly frying and taking on a golden look. I was trying so hard not to have the fish stick to the pan, and my hush puppies were just looking equally golden brown, little kernels swimming around in the large pot with oil. I knew by the expression on his face, something was very wrong. He looked around the kitchen desperately for something edible to serve our guests. Had fixed a lovely green salad, something I knew would be very tasty and complement any dinner, however bad. But he had not just discovered greens, he was a meat and potato guy. I had about 5 minutes to shower and change and was looking for my sandals as the guests arrived. So happy to see the two bottles of wine they brought. Real wine, not just the Matus, the most liquor store carried on their shelves representing wine. By the time we sat down to eat, we'd had plenty to drink. Had placed a few gardenias from the backyard around the fish, so it looked very exotic with its whiskers. But there was nothing that could improve the hush puppies. A mess is always a mess. Had tried my best to get the kernels to stick together when I found out hush puppies are little round balls. Tried mixing more eggs and flour together, dumping the greasy kernels into the mix, but there was no way I could form any balls. So decided on one big ball. The finished product looked more like fried porridge in my mind, but our guest politely called out, "Cornbread, how nice. Interesting shape." They had a great evening, thanks to all the wine, I think. Ate all the salad, most of the fish, but passed on the cornbread. And I don't blame them.
Ansha Briggs moved to Arkansas in 1970 and has never attempted to fry catfish or make hush puppies again. But she has conquered cornbread. She is a registered interior designer with her own business, Design and Art Consultation. In our final story of the night, Heidi Watkins Damron feels sure she can follow a family cornbread dressing recipe for Thanksgiving in Mama's Cornbread Dressing.
My first Thanksgiving as a real working adult was spent away from home. As the newbie in the office, guess who stayed in town to work over the holidays? A group of my good friends were all in the same newbie boat. We decided since none of us could go home, we'd create a real homemade Thanksgiving dinner ourselves. I volunteered to make the traditional cornbread dressing my mom always cooked. She cooked it, so I would too. I had never made traditional homemade cornbread dressing before, but how hard could it be? My mama and daddy were raised on country food, and their country spread always included cornbread. Growing up, I must have watched my mama make cornbread 1,000 times. It was a hands-on experience, literally. She would dump the cornmeal, eggs, and buttermilk into the bowl and mix with her hands. No spoons or mixer allowed. Her cornbread was light, fluffy, with that little crispy edge all around the square pan. Any extra cornbread that survived dinner was reserved for their milk and cornbread midnight snack. I had a cornbread expert on my team.
The week before Thanksgiving.
I called Mom the week before to get her recipe and precious cornbread insight. Mom, I'm baking the cornbread dressing for the group family dinner, and since you make the best cornbread in the world, would you give me the recipe? Mom replies, of course, honey. Now let me think. First, you bake some cornbread. Then after it cools. Oh, you should probably bake it the day before. And then, you know, just crumble it up very fine in a bowl. Then you make a soupy soup of the chicken broth. Cut up boiled eggs, your turkey pieces, and your spices, and some celery if you like. Now grease your pan and your hands, add your cornbread crumbs to the soupy soup, and gently mix. Now, if you need more crumbs, just add some white bread crumbs, but not too many. Just pour all that in your pan, cook it for about 45 minutes, but you don't want it to dry out, so make sure you watch it real good. Me, wait, how do you make cornbread? Don't you have the recipe written down that you could read it to me or fax it to me? My mom, oh honey, no, it's not written down. I've been making it so long it's in my head. Perfect. Okay, well, what do I set the oven on? What cornmeal is best? How do I make the cornbread? What size pan do I use for the dressing? What spices? Turkey pieces? Soupy soup? How much broth? How many eggs? How many cornbread crumbs? I got enough detailed information to make a shopping list, and I headed to the grocery store.
The Wednesday night before Thanksgiving.
I called my mom. Okay, what is this cornbread supposed to look like? She walked me through step by step until I was back off the ledge. When the cornbread was out of the oven, I called her back. Okay, time for a taste test, Mom said. Put some butter on it. Nothing better than hot cornbread with butter. Success, the cornbread was okay. A little dry, but not burned and not good. Mom said, okay, call me tomorrow when you're putting together the dressing. First step complete. The rest must be a breeze.
Thanksgiving Day.
I was up to drink some coffee and watch the parades. I assembled everything. Cornbread crumbs, check. Chicken broth, check. Turkey pieces, no way. Hard-boiled eggs, chopped, check. Celery, chopped, check. Spices, sage, thyme, salt, and pepper, check. White bread crumbs, if necessary, check. Pan, check. I'm ready. Then I get a little too confident. I can make this without her help. Hey, I did the cornbread okay, right? So I start mixing according to Mama's directions. The chicken broth, the eggs, the spices, the celery looks great. Wow, I thought, this is really making a lot of soupy soup. Oh, well, it tastes good. Time to add the cornbread crumbs. It doesn't look quite like Mom said it would look. I'll add more white bread crumbs. Because, you know, she said to have these on reserve if necessary. Well, it was necessary. I added more white bread crumbs and more white bread crumbs until I thought it looked right. Now, where is my pan? I filled two large oblong glass dishes with the cornbread slash white bread slash soupy soup. I'm watching the dressing cook and see it expanding in the pans. I'd filled them too full. I end up with four large oblong glass dishes of Mary Lou's traditional cornbread dressing. I'm serving six people for Thanksgiving. I called my mom. Hey, how many people does your dressing recipe serve? Oh, it'll make one good pan of dressing, Mama says. One big pan or a couple of small pans? One large pan, you remember, like I use at home? Fantastic. My group of six celebrated our first Thanksgiving as real working adults with turkey deli meat, boxed mac and cheese, yummy rolls, brownies, mashed potatoes, and four large pans of overcooked, dried-out cornbread dressing. It was pretty sweet.
Heidi Watkins Damron has been writing on the quiet for years. Some NBA great once asked, how many three-point shots do you make if you never take any?
This is Heidi's first three-point shot. So how about our stories and storytellers tonight? Thank you to all of our writers, thank you to our live audience, and thank you to UALR Public Radio. More on the Arkansas Cornbread Festival can be found at arkansascornbreadfestival.com. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, and our official media sponsor is AY Magazine, Arkansas's leading lifestyle publication at aymag.com. Additional support provided by William F. Lehman Public Library, the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, the Writers Colony at Derry Hollow, and the Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, YouTube, and Stitcher Smart Radio, and you can download and listen to our podcast on our website. More can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week at Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
This is another song that I wrote. It's called Unless You Move. Stay here.
writer accommodations provided by Robinwood Bed and Breakfast. More at robinwoodbnb.com. Experience tales in person as a member of our live audience. Schedule and ticket information can be found at our website, talesfromthesouth.com. Thanks for helping keep the art of Southern style storytelling alive. And we'll see you next week, either on this station or at Starving Artist Cafe, for another edition of Tales from the South.